Welcome to On the Brink, a fresh lens to take you and your business to new heights. Hi, I'm Andy Simon. I'm your host and your guide. And as I tell you for each podcast, my job is to get you off the brink. What I'd like to do is help you see, feel, and think in new ways so that you can soar. And often people get stuck or stalled. And I tell you, each time I meet with somebody and their story is shared, other people email me back and say, that was so inspiring. We love to tell stories. And unless you know others, you don't have anyone who you can role model yourself after. And you really don't know how they get there and how did it work. So today I have an extraordinary woman to share with you. Myrna Soto is here with me. Now, Myrna is a chapter in our new book, Women Mean Business, and I will show you her beautiful picture, as you can see it. And she has given us some fantastic wisdom. Her big quote was, I've made it my mantra never to be comfortable. And we're going to talk about that because it's very interesting. And I'm constantly stretching my limits and reaching for what may be next. And if you're listening, think through comfort or challenge. You know, are these opportunities or are they problems? Think about how to keep growing. I've had somebody on a podcast recently who said life is like a movie set. When you're at the great ending, have you regrets or did you build the right movie? And it's all in your hands. So thank you, Myrna, for joining me.
Thank you, Andy. It's a pleasure to be here with you today and to have a decent conversation about so many topics. And I love the way that you picked out that quote, because that's definitely something I want to talk about.
Me too. Let me tell the listener, I have a beautiful resume. I'm going to pick my way through it because Myrna's going to tell you more about her own journey. It makes it come alive better than I can do. She serves on the boards of CMS Energy and Consumers Energy, and that's New York State Electric. Is that who that is, CMS?
That is actually in the state of Michigan.
The state of Michigan. Terrific. And she's on the board of Spirit Airlines and TriNet and Popular Inc., which operates under the brand names of Banco Popular and Popular Bank. And she's recognized as a governance and board leadership fellow by the National Association of Corp Directors. And in addition to her public board service, Myrna serves on the board of Delinea, a privately held cybersecurity technology provider, on the board of Headspace Health, privately held on the board of Vectra, privately held cybersecurity technology provider. You get the thread. She's also had a marvelous career. And I don't know how you start. I'll read the bottom and then we can move up. She served as corporate SVP and global chief information security officer for Comcast, as well as SVP of technology infrastructure, and was responsible for all security and technology risk. And we are in the middle of the fourth industrial revolution, Myrna. The whole middle of your bio is wonderful. I'd like you to share your own journey with the audience, both those who are watching and those who are listening. Make it come alive for us because you've had a really interesting career. And in the middle of this fourth industrial revolution, it's even more powerful and important than ever. Who is Myrna? Please. Thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share my story. When I answer the question, who is Myrna, I always start with sharing the fact that I am fortunate that I came from what I call very humble beginnings. There are many different courses in life, and my journey started with a very humble blue-collar family, immigrant family. My parents are both Hispanic. My mother is from Puerto Rico and my father is from Cuba. And that matters because I will reference some of his experience and some of my parents' experience and what motivated me to do some of the things that I've done in my career. But came from a very humble background, blue collar ethnic community in South Florida, grew up in South Florida, went to college in South Florida. But then I spent the majority of my career away from South Florida. And that was out of sheer necessity for career progression and where the opportunities led me. But I've spent the greater part of the last 30 years, I often hate to say that number out loud, but for today, I'm going to be very proud of that number. The last 30 years or so as a C-level executive, mainly in the technology sector, but for a variety of industries. I had the pleasure early in my career to work for a number of hospitality providers in the form of cruise lines. I had the opportunity to work for a phenomenal organization that still to this day, I use the term we when I refer to them, and that is American Express. Was part of a number of teams and technology teams within American Express. And throughout my career, I worked in a number of other industries. One would be in the insurance industry, worked back again in the hospitality sector when I had an opportunity to join MGM Resorts in Las Vegas, Nevada. That, Andy, could be a whole podcast amongst itself. great experience there at MGM Resorts. And then my ultimate, my last executive role, as you mentioned, was at Comcast Corporation. Had a wonderful journey with Comcast Corporation. Although I was mainly in the technology sector throughout most of my career, I started my career as a business person first. And that has kind of led me into a number of incredible opportunities where, yes, I have the subject matter expertise around technology, but I'm always a business person first and always guide myself by that. And I have attributed that to much of the success that I've had in my career, where it wasn't just technology for technology's sake, but it was purposeful. And as you mentioned, you know, we're on the verge of this, this next industrial revolution in the form of how artificial intelligence is utilized and the generative nature of artificial intelligence. And I find myself even today having these type of business level conversations, business centric first, in many of the boardrooms that I serve in and many of the companies that I advise. But as far as my journey is concerned, I did have an incredible journey throughout the executive ranks. Felt, you know, really good about what I had accomplished, the teams that I have built, the legacies that I left behind in the companies that I worked for. And I was fortunate to start my journey in the boardroom while I was still an active executive at Comcast. And that opened up an enormous opportunity for me, what I call the next chapter of my career, which is what I'm living today, in the form of being a corporate director for many publicly traded companies, to being a board member for privately held organizations that are on the growth path and that will have a desire to become publicly traded at some point in their journey, and then to be an advisor and a consultant to many executives where I get to kind of glean my experience and have conversations with them. I'm often called a coach, but I don't necessarily use that term because I have a very strong appreciation for the coaching profession and know that it is a very unique skill, but I often will play coach when I can and where it's appropriate.
You have opened my thinking to so many things. That's why I said a bio is cool, but it doesn't really feel like anything. And as I feel your journey, some of the things that, and you can add to it, of course, I wrote and I've spoken about how to thrive in a male-dominated world. How do women do it? And if you are comfortable starting there, I'll give you my couple of things. You know, how do we overcome that anticipation? The words we use create the worlds we live in.
Right.
And I often coach people to think about not just what they're saying, but what's heard, and how do men and women speak differently, act differently, and how do you appreciate that instead of fight it? What have you experienced? Is that a legitimate question to start our conversation?
Absolutely. Absolutely a legitimate question. And I will start to answer that with a little extra nugget around my journey that may make sense as I answer the question and provide some anecdotes. Throughout my career, as I mentioned, I've been a technology executive. However, my formal education was in psychology.
So how did I know? I'm sorry to laugh and giggle.
No.
There's a little bit of that coming through loud and clear.
Yeah.
Please continue.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. And the laughter is perfect because I know you're gravitating to where I'm going to go with this is that, you know, I started my formal educational career in psychology. I got my undergrad degree in psychology and I actually went on and attained a master's degree in organizational and industrial psychology. And I have attributed that layer of understanding of the human psyche, understanding the motivations of individuals, how to include people, how to kind of galvanize around a mission to that educational process. And I have often had such, you know, really wonderful conversations with people that learned that about me and then ask me, well, how did you go from psychology major? And I actually did want to be a mental health therapist. That was my goal, to becoming a technology leader. And that's a much longer story, but there are some inroads there that kind of gravitate back to your question. So when I think about my career, and it may sound a little cliche-ish, but I found myself to be the only woman in the room more often than not in the technology arena. Add to that, that I was not an engineer by former education. So being accepted in this ecosystem and in this world was not an easy thing. But I did use my humanistic abilities to connect with people and to make sure that people understood that I was bringing a perspective to the table that didn't exist before, and that there was value in us kind of working together and understanding how the differences with how we were approaching a problem could be solved. But I will also attribute the fact that, you know, you quoted the comfort piece in the book. You know, I also attribute this to my upbringing and where I came from, where my parents, who were both, you know, immigrants to the mainland. I say the mainland because Puerto Rico is part of the United States, and my mother's very proud that she was born a U.S. citizen from the get-go. But obviously was a transplant from the island into the mainland here in the United States. And that experience and raising a family came with a lot of challenges. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in an environment where there were struggles, but there was also tenacity and grit and the opportunity to say, you know what, I want to do better for my family and I want to do better for the future of our family. And when I found myself in these circles where I'd look left, look right, and I'm like, I'm the only one. And add to that, now I have to even prove myself even more because they look at me and they say, you're not an engineer. Mm. I used a lot of that learning to kind of just be have this tenacious ability to not get knocked down and not allow arrogance or ego to get in the way, but to truly partner with people. I won't say that it was easy, but I think being able to articulate in a certain way is critically important. You know, I mentor a number of young ladies in their early stages of their career, and they will say things to me like, you know, I can't get the attention. I can't get people to listen to me. And I often say to them, is it what you're saying or is it how you are saying it? And we go through these role-playing models and whatnot. And one of the biggest compliments that I got in my early in my career is someone that I work with, and this may date all of us a little bit. In my career said to me, he says, Myrna, you are like E.F. Hutton. When you speak, wait, everyone listens. Right? And for those of you that don't know who E.F. Hutton is,
that was their ad, but that's a great line.
Yeah. But I realized, I'm like, well, why is that happening? Why are they listening? And I know exactly why. I felt at the time I knew exactly why. And it was because I was appealing to them. Mm-hmm. I was appealing to their interests. I was appealing to what is it that I could do to work with them to reach a common goal. And that sounds kind of lofty, but when you kind of drill down, it is exactly what made it work for me and has made it work throughout my entire career. And then I've also made it a point of building allies. Mm. So, you know, I mentor a lot of young ladies that are early in their career. And I often say to them that although you may be in a male-dominated field or you may find yourself where there are so many men in higher power positions, do not be adversarial. This is an opportunity to kind of reach across and build allyship, because my biggest sponsors throughout my career were men.
Yes.
And I attribute or I reflect on them, and I came to the realization that all of my key sponsors throughout my career that were men happened to have been fathers of daughters. And there's something there. You know, I believe that they were in the business world, in the corporate arena. They kind of looked around and said, I got little girls. I want them to have a better opportunity. So it's my time to make sure that that happens. And it starts with being an ally and sponsoring women in the workplace. So I hope it gives you a little bit of perspective of how my mind thinks about that.
Well, what I'm sitting here smiling because completely different answer than I ever had imagined. But you navigated rocky waters, you know, whitewater canoed, by realizing that it's not about you. It's about how do I help them in a fashion that they can hear you? Because often, and as you're coaching these women, one of the messages that I've learned, I mean, how many times was I the only or the first? Either in the C-suite, in my second book, I actually had a story in there about being at a board meeting. I was an EVP of a bank. Went to a board meeting, there were 49 men and none in me. We didn't say anything. We listened carefully, and I wasn't quite sure how you said something. Do I raise my hand? I had to learn the protocols, and there was no one to manage to help you. But it's interesting in reflection, though, because I was able to navigate my rocky waters thinking about them and we, not I and me. And while I hear that often, we've learned a lot about conversational intelligence. The brain creates a whole lot of happy oxytocin when you talk about we and co-creating, and it creates a lot of nasty cortisol when you talk about I and me. And so you don't even know that, but when we do know that, we know that how you speak is more important than what you've said, because they can't hear you. And if you put the I up too often, they have a roadblock and it's all about her. And if it's a woman on top of it who isn't even an engineer, well, we'll discount that. Well, how fast can we delete what she just said? But there's chemistry to it. And I do think as you understand it, and the neurosciences are teaching us so much, all of a sudden it becomes a more understandable roadmap toward success. But it's so interesting as I'm listening to you, are there now more women in those boardroom C-suites? And are they changing the complexion of the conversation?
They are. So the short answer is unequivocally yes. Are we at a representation level that I think that we will feel equitable and satisfied? Not yet, but we are making our way there, which is a wonderful thing as I look back, you know, how the composition looked like earlier in my career to where it is today. And I'm fortunate to be a part of, and I say be a part of, and have contributed to influencing organizations to open up opportunities and open their mindset around who is selected, who is considered, who is supported, and things of that nature. So I do think it's changing. It has changed and will continue to change. One of the things that I find very fascinating right now is, in addition to the gender composition, is the multi-generational makeup of teams, right? And I think that's a great opportunity to reflect on exactly what you just shared around how we communicate, how we involved, how we listen, listening. I learned that through my psychology education, the power of listening.
Yes.
And, you know, many people that know me well personally know I'm pretty quick. I'm a quick wit, right? Quick to respond. And one of the things that was really incredibly important for me to learn was to pause.
Yes.
Maybe you don't need to just respond right away. Just listen and continue to listen and to be empathetic about what you're hearing. And I find that that is such a critically important skill right now because of the multi-generational workforce, multi-generational boardroom, multi-generational advisory committees, you name it.
Yes.
And I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful thing where I can find myself with someone that is senior to me in age and experience and someone that is earlier in their career. And we're equally at the seat of the table and we are peers. Yep. And to be able to kind of accept that as a peer relationship and continue to learn from one another, I think it's a beautiful thing. But it requires each of these generations to come to the table with a very open, and I'm going to use, you know, the buzzword, inclusive type of perspective, and not necessarily feel like, well, you know, I've been in this you know, I've been in this world for X number of years and I've done this and I've done that. You know, that's not the way to do it. And again, you know, I'll reflect back and correlate to your statement. Then the number of times that I is used, I'm often questioned. When I say questioned, they'll hear me say this term and they'll say, I don't understand, Marta, what do you mean? So I will often talk about companies and teams, and I will still say we. Yes. And they're like, but you're not part of that organization anymore. And I said, well, once part of a team, always part of a team. Yes. And I will use that term, we, sometimes subconsciously, it just happens naturally. But it's a very interesting dynamic that we have in front of us, both generational, gender composition. I'm going to feed off of the positivity that we were talking about earlier. It's just a wonderful time to be alive and to be associated with professionals and working with such a dynamic group of people.
And now a word from our sponsors, Simon Associates Management Consultants. That's us. And we're here to help you see, feel, and think in new ways. Whether you are an organization that's stuck or stalled, or an individual in that organization who's looking to rethink their own life's journey, Simon Associates has designed programs and processes to help you do just that. Our first book, On the Brink, A Fresh Lens to Take Your Business to New Heights, told the stories of 7 clients who were stuck or stalled, and a little anthropology helped them see things through a fresh lens, reignite their growth, and soar again. My new book that came out in January 2021 is called Rethink, Smashing the Myths of Women in Business. It's all about how 11 women, including myself, were able to see past the hurdles, the glass ceilings, and the brick walls and become the best that they could be. They heard things like women aren't lawyers and women can't lead and women aren't in geosciences. And they said, of course we are. And they really pushed through and did it with such ease that they want other women to see what's possible. At the end of the book, I provide a bit of a how-to process for you. If you're on the brink of rethinking your own life's journey, it's time to pause, step back, and ask yourself, where am I going? What's my passion and my purpose? And am I there or can I get there? Send us your emails to info@andysimon.com and we'll get right back to you to see how we can help. On andysimon.com are some free chapters for both books. And you can also join our newsletter and our Facebook group, Rethink with Andy Simon. We are bringing together women to help other women do what they can't do by themselves, very often to see what's possible and become the best that they can be. Come join us. And now back to our podcast.
As long as you, and you are, can be reflective.
That's right.
I worked with one company and they were having a very difficult time because the elders had one set of values and were working really hard for their pension. And the youngers wanted a 9-to-5 job and thank you very much. I'm not worried about my pension. And the poor guys in the middle, mostly guys, had to translate to keep the place whole so that they had enough people doing enough work. And it was most interesting because these were as if they were Greeks and Romans. You know, and they didn't realize that they had such different life experiences, values, and behaviors that they had to come across the bridge, or they couldn't ever build together something that would actually stand up. And the future of only working 9-to-5 wasn't ever going to work. You had to build something different. It was very interesting. So you're bored. Doesn't realize that they each come with a different set of value of hearing. Their stories are different. And so each time you hear someone, you can't process it because you have no context. And you, from your psychological background, add a little neuroscience in there, you realize that these are complicated, joyful times. If you can sit and watch and not find yourself in a spinning Ferris wheel trying to figure out now who's on first. But it is important because that's where change is coming from, you know? And if we can respect each other and find a common objective or goal, we together won't ever build it. I am interested, if I can shift the conversation just a little bit. Someone sent me a wonderful South by Southwest tape that Amy Webb had done about the fourth industrial revolution. And I had to give a talk on the future
Someone has said my podcast is among the top 20 futurist podcasts. I didn't know I was a futurist. But I do know that if we can't see the future and prepare for it, you can't live today very well. And there's a bit of literature emerging about the impact of all of this new technology, and not just AI, on particularly women in the workplace, as if we are aliens to the technology. And I say that laughingly, but that's the kind of tone in the articles. What's all this technology going to mean for women? Are they going to lose jobs? Are they going to have to change? Are they? And then on the other side, they're so smart, they'll be leaving us. It's really hypothetical. But do you have a perspective, being a woman in without an engineering degree who's thrived in cyber technology? Your perspective will be most appreciated.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to share. You know, I think that there's an interesting conundrum that we have when we think about some of the perceptions of this revolution and the inferences about women. And it for me, it clearly points to the softer skills being eliminated, right? And albeit, you know, my educational process started with the softer skills. As I continued my career in technology, I obviously placed a significant amount of effort and got a second graduate degree that happened to be a technical degree so that I could have the credibility and work in the technical environment. And really the merging of these two things, I think, was just magical, at least for me personally. So when I think about this revolution, the same should happen, right? It is not the elimination of any one type of worker or any gender specific worker, but it's how does this new era of being able to use these technologies to guide our decision-making process with facts and data? How does the technology now provide us a greater level of perspective and context to make better decisions or to guide ourselves to different problems and solutions to problems and things of that nature? My perspective is a lot of people are very fearful of what may come. And I am much more of an optimist. I believe that when we think about the multiple industrial revolutions that mankind has seen, if we go back to the early revolutions, we'd say, you know, the first industrial revolution was manufacturing and factory, changing the factory floor and how things were processed. And I'm sure I was not alive then, but at that time, the horror was, oh my God, jobs will be eliminated and what will we be needed for? And we've proven time and time again that we will evolve. And I think that this is another one of those moments in time that we will evolve. We will not be eliminated, but that we will grow and they will have an opportunity to use this technology in a much, much more enriched way to guide, assist. Will it require us to upskill certain workforces? Absolutely. Every single one of these revolutions have required us to either retool certain roles and upskill our capabilities. And I personally think that's a phenomenal thing and it's a very positive thing.
Yeah.
The one caveat would be that we have to be very mindful on how we use the technology. We have to be very mindful on how the data collection, the quality of the data that will be used for contextual decision generation and things of that nature is incredibly important. Upend, including to make sure that it doesn't create biases against groups. It doesn't create biases against different types of individuals in different scenarios. I had a conversation with a dear friend of mine that's in the insurance industry, and we talked at great lengths about the potential that biases could be weaponized against individuals who have, you know, medical conditions and claims management, as an example.
Yeah.
So we've got to be really, really mindful about the ethical use of these technologies and to set the stage for combating misinformation, poor data quality, because the outcomes could be detrimental.
Well, you know, in Anthro 101, way back when I was an undergraduate, I vividly remember the professor saying, out of context data do not exist. And I vividly remember it because I sat there and I thought about, so there really isn't anything. It's in context, it has a meaning. Like your boardroom with multiple generations, that same words being spoken have different meanings in the different minds of the people there. That's not a whole lot different than AI generating something with data. Just like the minds in the room, interpreting it in a particular fashion. And I am in love with ChatGPT, and I have a minor ability to use it. I'm learning a great deal. But even Shutterstock, where I buy my pictures, has an AI function. And I asked it to create me something for a talk I'm giving, and it was the most beautiful picture. And I bought it the same way I'd buy it if a photographer had made it. And I said, ah, and then on LinkedIn, everything I write can be rewritten using AI. So then my copywriter is having a fit. And I said, no, you're going to have to read. Well, it doesn't sound like you. I said, does that matter to anybody? The things that you think are important may not be. Okay. What may matter is that they have some information from an anthropologist. Whether I wrote it or I got it from AI and we edited it or we added a dimension to it. And there's a tremendous, you know, stuff coming out that a whole population of people who now write or draw or do photography may find themselves having to rethink themselves. And rethinking themselves, it could be really very creative. But don't assume that what you've always done for the last 20 years is in fact what's coming for the next 20 years. It's not going to happen. That's and right. Be excited about it. You wrote one thing here, comfort is death. And you also said, never settle. I couldn't tell you how excited I was as I read your wisdoms. Yes, I'm right there with you because life is too interesting.
Right.
You know? And what technology is opening, and I don't care if it's blockchain or 3D printing, Russia has a 3D printer that'll print a house in a day. What does it mean for contractors, right?
Yeah, I think I love the way that you put a wrapper on this topic, because it does kind of gravitate to the fact that we should be striving for constant learning. Yeah. We should be striving for a very healthy degree of change. I say healthy because pace of change will depend on a multitude of circumstances. But I think that that's where if we were stagnant, and we just kind of just stayed in our status, whatever that is, that may be comfortable because we're not pressured, mm-hmm. we're not stretched. And that's where I get my little comfort level from, is I have questioned myself on many occasions throughout my entire life and to say, well, if this class was simple for me, if it was easy for me to finish, well, I got to look for something more challenging. If this role in my professional career, if I feel that I have mastered it and I wake up and I can do this with my eyes closed, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
What else can I do, right? What else can I add? What else can I do? And whether it was by design or not, I feel that when I've had those opportunities to do that, and people then notice and say, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. I now have an opportunity to influence how somebody else is thinking about where they are, what they're doing. You opened up today saying, you know, sometimes we feel stuck. Sometimes, you know, we feel that we're in a certain spot and we kind of don't know how to get out of it. And I have to think reinvention is just the lifeline of our prosperity and fulfillment. And, you know, I often do this in air quotes. When people ask me about my career journey and I say, well, I retired from my corporate career. And yeah. Those that know me well say that there is nothing about my life that reads retirement. and I made the mention in the book that for me, retirement is rewirement, like rewiring my mind of what it is I'm going to do. Yeah. So when it comes to technology, we need to embrace it. We need to understand it. We also need to be influential in how it's utilized, when it's utilized, but we shouldn't fear it as long as we can create.
As long as we can create something.
An ecosystem that keeps the integrity and the ethical use in check, I think it's going to be a wonderful thing.
It's interesting. Yesterday, we did a presentation to Noblis, a tech company and government and other work. And one of the women said, How would you advise me? I'm a tech person, and I would like to go and explore other fields. And I had lots of thoughts that went through my head. I said, when you started to tell me the story that you're a tech person, that immediately defined you. And how many other persons are you besides that? And what fields would you like to explore? Because it's all in your hands. And it isn't anyone coming to you and saying, you should now discover human resources or, I don't know, music or, you know, what in your, remember, you're making your own movie up. What's in your story? Because to your point, my husband and I both retired about 35 years ago. You know, if retirement is doing what you love to do, he grew several businesses. He's a serial entrepreneur. And I've been in business for 23 years, enjoying every moment of it. And I don't know what I would retire to because I'd end up doing it again. And the complexity of it is exactly what I love, you know, because I don't know where it's going. But to this woman, with the definition of herself in tech, I thought was interesting in the context of our conversation today, because you never were a tech woman, were you?
No. I never was a tech woman. I think I was a business leader that happened to be in tech, right? Mm-hmm.
I would say yes.
Yeah. And you know, the individual that asked you that question, I'm sure that you provided some insights and you kind of geared them to think differently about how they were even posing the question, because it is very reflective on how we view and project. You know, and I've had engineers, female engineers, brilliant engineers, you know, basically say, look, you know, I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really enjoy it. And what would you recommend for me to do? And I often start with, what are your interests?
Yes.
And as simple as what is your interest, and being able to kind of take interests and then equate them and correlate them to potential business roles that they could take their interest, their energy, their motivation. And oh, by the way, that engineering experience, you know, fold that in.
Yeah.
To be able to create an opportunity. I had a woman I was speaking to today, and she asked me a very specific question about her progression. And I said to her, one of the things that you have in front of you, for her in particular, is you work in an incredible organization that will allow you to create a role.
Yes.
Very powerful. This is your moment to create a role that will be fulfilling to you and that will add value to your organization. And it was like fireworks went off. The wheels started turning. And I could tell that she was like, didn't even realize it, under her nose.
Yes.
So I think, you know, that's another thing that we often, you know, going back to comfort and challenges, you know, we often have trouble kind of seeing what's in front of us. Right?
Well, I think that you and I could talk a lot about a lot of things, but I also think that we've probably shared enough about Myrna Soto to our audience to sort of do a wrap up, because I, whether they're driving or listening when they're working out or cooking in the kitchen, a half hour is a lot of time to think about all the things that we've been talking about. I'd like to leave them with one or two or three things that you think are important for them to remember. They often remember the ending better than the beginning. One or two things you think would be important to share with them, like don't forget or take action on, or something you want to share?
Yeah, I'd love to mention that I'm a firm believer that progression is not always linear. Yeah. It's really, really important for us to value the experiences and the things that we can do and contribute that don't necessarily have those traditional linear paths.
Yes.
And not ignore them, because those opportunities come to us at times, and sometimes we create them. So please pay attention to that and really, really take advantage of them. And then the other piece is that I think it's truly important. Don't forget the fact that where you started doesn't necessarily mean this is where you need to be.
Yes.
There's reinvention that happens both at our own hand and sometimes to us that we need to embrace. And I think that evolving and change is just such a healthy attribute to embrace.
I think this has been such fun. I can't tell you how much I enjoy meeting people, women, but men as well, who embrace the things I love, which is uncertainty and complexity and curiosity. And life is so today, even more so than we both started out, without clear destinations, but lots of stops along the way somewhere that's really cool. You made a point, and I don't want to lose it. We often talk about life-work balance, but this is about work-life choices. And I want to just emphasize to the audience, the listeners, people ask me about how do you blend life and work? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. You just do it. You know, you figure out it's another part of a complex life. Life is complicated, and nobody's telling you how to do it. So think about a pretty good story about how you want to do it and make it happen. And try and control your story, because that's what you're going to live. That mind has a great story. It does exactly what it thinks you wanted to do. Be happy or be sad. It's all up to you. And this is how you can wake every day with a smile. Listen to Myrna and really embrace this journey we're on. It's going to be a great, wherever we're going and however. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Andy. I really appreciate the time. Really appreciate the listeners listening in. And this was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. Now I'm going to thank the listeners who come. You lifted us to be the top 5% of podcasts globally. But I enjoy getting all kinds of emails from across the globe, Philippines and Australia and wherever you are, and send us people who you would like to hear from. And I must always tell you that I enjoy doing this. Our books are all available. Women Mean Business is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookseller. The wisdom in there. I've had people who have yellow marked the book. I said, it's changing the way I'm running my business. Changing the way I'm running your business. Another one said, I'm planning 2024 by reading the book. I said, I've written three books. This is the first that it comes alive in the hearts and minds of the reader. Thanks to you, Myrna. So thank you for being part of it.
Thank you very much.
And for all of you, remember, as an anthropologist, we take observations, turn them into innovations. You can do the same. You can be an amateur anthropologist and have a great time. Goodbye now. Have a great day.